Welcome to Hype, episode 156. My name is Selena and I'm joined by Pam this week for another exciting week of entertainment news stories. How are you doing, Pam?
Good. How are you?
I'm good. On the other side of the world, it's morning here and night for Pam, and we're both tired. But like, it's so late / early.
For different reasons, though.
Yeah. Yes, but we are very, very excited to get into all of the different news discussion. And if you are on Patreon with us, or if you're interested in being on Patreon with us, that's patreon.com/hypepodcast. This week's bonus discussion will be all about other podcasts that we listen to. So, you know, not to turn you guys away, but you might be looking for other stuff to keep your ears busy as you go around doing whatever you do when you listen to podcasts. So head over to Patreon and check that out. You can also see the videos that we do and the other bonus discussions and all of that. And if you want to get in contact with us about the regular show or just in general, you can do that by emailing hype@hypeable.com. You can tweet us at hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram at hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can, of course, head over to hypeable.com. Which is hypeable.com/podcasts, or wherever you find the podcasts on there. You can leave us a comment on the most recent post. So the first thing we do, as always on Hype, is how we hype, and Pam has blown us all away with her incredible hype this week, and I cannot wait to hear all about it.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it finally happened. I got invited to go to Pixar. I've been waiting.
The invitation came, the golden ticket.
Yeah, via Andrew. So I went on behalf of Hypeable, and it was just like, it was so magical. And also, it was the early press preview of Coco, which you guys know I've been really excited about, and also like very fitting for me in general. And it was just like almost 2 days of amazingness, and I want to tell you guys like everything I've learned, but I can't because we're embargoed. But like, I'm so excited for you guys to see the movie. And yeah, I mean, like, Pixar is amazing. If you ever like get the opportunity to visit the studio, it's worth it. Like, figure out how to make it work. You do have to be invited by somebody or like know somebody that works there to come onto the lot, because it is like a closed studio. They just have too many secrets to keep. And it's like so funny because I posted some pictures, but like none of them are really related to Coco, because you can only take pictures in certain parts of the building. And a lot of the Coco stuff was like on the floor that you couldn't take any pictures in. So that was like, it was pretty funny because, you know, we want to get like social media stuff up for like Hypeable and also for Hype. And it's like, oh, how am I going to do this to be like, I was here? And there's only like so much you can take pictures of. But yeah, it was just like unforgettable and so wonderful to get to go and just to hear from all of these people that put so much effort into creating these beautiful films. Like, you don't really think about all of the technical stuff really that goes into what Pixar does, but it was just amazing to hear about, you know, kind of like the labor of love from all different aspects, from like the special effects to like the storytelling and things like that. So we'll have a write-up on Hypeable very soon. As soon as I can, like, release that information, it'll go up. So stay tuned. And if you're joining us on Patreon, I will be sharing some more little, like, details and stuff like that with you guys over there. Not, like, any exclusive details, because I can't talk about it and I don't want us to get sued, but just kind of more about, like, I guess my experience and stuff like that. But yeah. It was a great time, and I was really happy that I was able to go, and I'm so excited for everybody to see Coco, and I'm excited to see like more of the film, because it wasn't complete. We didn't see like the full film, so we saw the first 30 minutes, but yeah, it was great.
Cool. Awesome. I'm so excited to hear about it. I'm glad you had a good time. Oh, so we'll be keeping you guys informed. We hope everyone else is excited about Coco 2. We're going to head over into our lineup of news now, and Pam has the first story, equally exciting.
Yes, I have the first news story. Very fitting transition that Selena has set up for us here. We have heard a lot about the casting for Jon Favreau's upcoming live-action adaptation of The Lion King, and the cast is potentially getting even cooler than it already is. So we already know that James Earl Jones is coming back to play Mufasa, but we had not heard anything really about Scar, and now it sounds as though Chiwetel Ejiofor is actually potentially going to be voicing the big bad in this movie, which would be really exciting because he's such a phenomenal actor. He's, you know, Academy Award winner, so they can't do any better than him unless Jeremy Irons decides to come back. But that doesn't sound like it's going to be a possibility. So this is kind of interesting too, because right around D23, we heard rumors that Hugh Jackman was potentially going to step in and assume the role. And then he like shot down those rumors. Everybody was like, who's going to play Scar? Who's going to play Scar? And now it sounds like they may have found him. So this is pretty cool. I'm down for this. This movie is going to be great. And I'm really excited to check it out when it hits theaters in July of 2019.
This is so cool. Such a cool casting. Disney is really killing it with these villains. And this is kind of leading nicely into our next story, which is that Disney's live action Aladdin continues the casting that shakes up the internet, but this time for very different reasons. They've cast what has been dubbed Hot Jafar, who's played by Marwan Kenzari. And it's so funny because this is probably one of the first times where I feel justified in using the word shook in conversation. People are shook by how attractive this actor is. And, you know, someone found his Instagram with shirtless pictures and they're all like, how can Jafar be a villain when he's so attractive? And won't Jasmine just fall in love with him? And I find that hilarious because, like, obviously, no, if he's evil, he's evil. It doesn't matter what he looks like. Like, this expectation for villains to be ugly is so weird.
But also, like, Naveen Andrews is a very attractive man and Scar in the short-lived Once Upon a Time in Wonderland. So
Scar?
Yeah, was it? Oh no, he was Jafar.
I was like, who was he playing? But yeah, you're right. You're right. That's a very good point. I didn't even consider. I'm a Lost fan. I'm very embarrassed right now. But it's also just hilarious to see people like react to this casting news, be like, I'm so conflicted. I'm like siding with Jafar now. And like, it is true that in the cartoon, attractive is not the word that you would use about him, I guess. I guess you could if you wanted to, but he's definitely not drawn to be the attractive character. That is, you know, obviously Aladdin, but who is very attractive if you, you know, look for that in cartoon characters, which I obviously do not. But if you did. Anyway, so this guy, basically the story is that they found a hot Jafar and the internet is shook. And then they've also cast SNL's Nassim Pedrad. I was looking for her name. Yeah, there's no news of who she'll play, but the Hollywood Reporter is saying she'll be new characters. So Andrew speculating a love interest for Jafar because apparently he cannot go, you know, outside of the love story. funny story. I mean, he is very attractive, so
yeah,
good for them.
I mean, like in the original animated Aladdin, it gets a little weird between Jafar and Jasmine. Not on her end, but he kind of definitely comes off as a sexual predator. Not that that should equal sexually attractive person, but like, I'm sure they'll play out some weird tension because it's Hollywood and they can.
Probably. Oh my gosh.
Well, we got the exciting Disney news out of the way. Now we have some pretty sad Disney news. Well, only if you're a Netflix subscriber. So last year, everybody got really excited because Disney announced that they were partnering with Netflix exclusively. And this was basically going to allow all Disney titles to practically instantly be available via Netflix as soon as they came out on VOD or DVD. And it's been really great because, you know, like, everything from Star Wars to Zootopia to Pete's Dragon to just about any recent Disney movie you can imagine has popped up So soon after, it's been available to buy on Netflix, and it's been really fun to get to relive those. I'm sure a lot of you guys that are Netflix subscribers would agree. But unfortunately, Disney announced on Tuesday that they've actually acquired a majority stake in the company BAM Tech, which is a streaming technology company, and that means that they will be parting ways with Netflix to launch their own streaming service, while they will be presumably streaming these titles instead. That means that we're all just going to have to shell out more money for more streaming services if we want the advantage of, or not the advantage, but like the luxury of accessibility, so to speak. So this kind of sucks because it's possible that a lot of these movies that we've had in our queues for a while, haven't had a chance to watch, will no longer be on Netflix. It cuts down on a lot of, you know, the movies that they have been offering for other subscribers. And there's no telling how much Disney is going to charge to be able to use this platform. Presumably, they'll be able to charge a lot just because, you know, they're a big time company. People want to see their movies. It's a high demand situation. So that's set to launch in 2019. And I'm sure that details will roll out, you know, as we get closer and closer to launch dates. What do you think about this? This is interesting, but I guess not surprising.
Yeah, well, I guess it was like doubly not surprising to me because when the story came up, I was super confused because they announced this exact thing like 1 or 2 years ago when they launched Disney Life. I think it was 1 or 2 years ago. I wrote up the story saying, you know, Disney was leaving Netflix to launch Disney Life. And I was like, what's happening? What year is this? What's going on? But it turned out that that was just in Europe. So they've already done this over here. So I'm not surprised or concerned, because I mean, if it's anything like that, it's fine. What they've done over here, which I'm not, obviously doesn't sound exactly like what they're going to do in the US, it's that Disney Life is basically the home of all Disney content, and you can subscribe to that and you can get all the Disney movies. And I'm pretty sure, I don't know about the live action, because I think that's a little bit of a gray area and it will continue to be so. But then on Netflix itself, there's hardly anything, but they do have some titles. Like right now, I think the only Disney movie on there is The Good Dinosaur. Then obviously, and this is also a question for you, if you know about this, but if it's also going to, how much it's going to affect their live action. Because I know on Netflix here, we have a couple of Star Wars films right now, like The Force Awakens, and we have like a couple of other Disney live action movies as well. So I'm sure they're probably all over Disney Life, or maybe it's just for kids. Like, again, I don't have Disney Life, so I'm not 100% sure of the details, but I thought it was funny that people were making such an uproar when, like, it's basically just an expansion of a thing they're already doing over here. But then I'm also very curious how it's gonna affect their live action movies, especially because some of them are like co-productions and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I do know that here in the United States on Netflix, it's actually, it blankets everything from Disney titles to like Moana to like Disney Pixar, like, I don't know, I can't think of an example right now, like Up to like live action, like Pete's Dragon to Marvel movies, like Doctor Strange and Winter Soldier and stuff like that are up there. And then I just saw Rogue One pop up the other day. I'm sure it's been there for a while, but yeah, it's definitely just like any Disney entity, even if it's Disney and another studio, has been popping up on Netflix. So if they pull those, it'll be a big blow.
But just looking at Disney Life, I'm just wondering how much of it they'll actually pull, because at least in Europe, it seems like, I mean, if they're ending their deal with Netflix completely, again, how is that going to affect things like Star Wars and stuff? Because that's also Lucasfilm. Or Marvel movies, because that's also Marvel, obviously. So that's going to be interesting to see. And I think for me personally, that's going to, and not that I'm American, so it doesn't matter, but if I was American, that would be more of concern to me, because I think if you're like, if you have a family, if you have kids, like this Disney Life thing sounds pretty ideal, to be honest, as a streaming platform specifically for kids. But if I'm an adult and I want to watch, like, I want to go on Netflix and be able to watch, like, whether it's Moana or if it's Captain America, you know, like, I want, like, that would be cool to still have on Netflix, and that will definitely be a big blow. But it feels like the lines aren't quite drawn yet. And it's two years out, so maybe that's why.
I mean, like, I think that they're still kind of keeping those cards close to the chest, as far as I can tell. But I'm sure that it'll only be a matter of time before we get more information on this. Mm-hmm. It's definitely created a buzz, and that's never really a bad thing in terms of PR. So I guess we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. And the news are just like, you're a poo. But yeah, if you're interested in reading more about this, go check out Disney Life and see what's actually going on over there, because it feels like it. This is just an extension of that. So we have a release date now for my favorite movie that I haven't seen yet. That is gonna, now I know what I'm doing. What I'm doing for my birthday next year, because my favorite movie is coming out on my birthday, which is February 23rd. Annihilation is a movie that we were talking about a while back, because it stars like pretty much all of our favorite people. It has a cast led by four women: Natalie Portman, Gina Rodriguez, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Tessa Thompson, and is also starring Oscar Isaac. So already there, the cast is pretty incredible. It actually follows, it continues this amazing Hollywood trend of women in STEM, and has a team of female scientists. It's based on a book by Jeff Vandermeer and will be directed by Alex Garland, who also did Ex Machina. And these four female scientists is kind of like post-apocalyptic or like futuristic, environmentally destroyed Earth, and they travel into an area known as Area X, where all kinds of mysterious things happen. The book is really weird and hard to follow, because it doesn't, it's very like, it's first person and it's very not descriptive, so it's tough to understand what's going on, but it's very, very interesting. And for all, like, by all accounts, the movie adaptation of this is going to be incredible. And it will also help if you don't understand what's happening in the book, because it'll be on the screen. So I'm super excited. I want to watch this on my birthday. I'm so cool. It's so cool. I love it. Are you excited about this?
It sounds really cool. I wasn't aware of its existence, but the fact that you're hyped for it gives me hope for it, because, you know, I know that you don't hype lightly.
Yeah, and the cast for this, I mean, I'm not done with the book. I started reading the book after learning about the cast, but the cast for this is amazing. And I know if you follow Gina Rodriguez on Instagram, she's been putting up a couple of pictures while they were filming that just makes me really excited too. But it's always good to see, you know, after Hidden Figures and stuff, it's always good to see more female-led science-themed movies.
Yeah. And I'm here for anything she does anyway, so, you know.
Yeah.
On board for this. So here's something else with a strong female lead. I feel like we learned about a year ago that Cate Blanchett was reportedly in talks to potentially play Lucille Ball. So that had been confirmed already, but what we didn't know is whether or not this upcoming biopic would see the light of day. And now we have learned that Amazon has officially acquired the rights to the biopic, and this is actually written by Lucille Ball's own children and Aaron Sorkin, so that should mean that it's A, accurate, and B, like, just wonderful in terms of storytelling, because Sorkin has a wonderful reputation. So the upcoming biopic is said to be called Lucy and Desi, and it'll explore the relationship between Lucille Ball and her husband Desi Arnaz, who created the iconic sitcom I Love Lucy in the 40s. There's no word yet on who will be playing Desi to Cate Blanchett's Lucille, but the rumor is that perhaps they'll tap Javier Bardem, which would be a very interesting choice. And they're still casting this, so they're looking for people to portray Vivian Vance and William Frawley, who were the co-stars on I Love Lucy. But I am looking forward to checking this out, because I Love Lucy is just iconic, and Lucille Ball is so iconic as an actress, but we don't really know. I mean, like, unless you did some research, like, there's not too much that's known about her. She was kind of like the golden age of Hollywood, where there were no tabloids and stuff like that. So you only saw these people on TV. And it wasn't until later that we learned a little bit more about who they were personally as people. So it'll be interesting to see how Sorkin goes about telling this particular story.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, I'm not, again, not being American sort of means that people like Lucille Ball are people that I'm completely unfamiliar with, except for like in trivia, you know, questions. I'm like, I Love Lucy. I know that. But apart from that, I know nothing Jon Snow. So this is going to be cool. And just looking at the pictures, I know people are saying that Cate Blanchett doesn't sound like her. You know, like, they have very different voices. But I think in terms of similarity, I think it's pretty spot on casting. And I'm, you know, obviously I know that she was a pioneer, you know, within the field of like women in Hollywood, and her and Desi Arnaz, they did I Love Lucy, and it was sort of like a game changer, both for women in Hollywood and some of the things that she requested that Lucy be sort of quote unquote allowed to do and things like that. Would be I'm very, very interested to see this filmed, because it's, again, it's one of the ways of opening up this story that I know nothing about to me.
Yeah, I mean, like, iconic in more ways than one, because she was really was a pioneer of women in comedy. But not only that, Desi Arnaz was a pioneer for minorities in television. I mean, he was a Cuban mm-hmm. actor starring on a hit American sitcom in the 40s. So let that sink in for a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
That's incredible.
Definitely keeping tabs on this one.
Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, so I feel like this next story should have been yours. I'm surprised you didn't pick it, because it's your guy who got mad at me once. I'm going to report on it anyway.
He likes me.
He likes you. Glenn Mazzara, dividing the hype waters here. Hi, Glenn, if you're listening. No, Glenn Mazzara, who has worked on The Walking Dead and obviously also on Pam's favorite show, Damien, Merlin Connection, is going to be helming what is going to be the TV adaptation of Stephen King's The Dark Tower. Now, you might be thinking, The Dark Tower? Isn't that just a major blockbuster movie starring Idris Elba? Yes, it is, dear listener, but that has never stopped Hollywood before and is not about to stop it now. This TV series hasn't yet found its home, but it's being developed by Media Rights Capital and Sony Pictures Television. And I think that despite the fact that, oh, we're getting like two adaptations at the same time, I think this is really cool, both because Glenn Mazzara, who, I is actually really, really good, and I feel like his genre experience lends himself really well to the theme and feel of The Dark Tower, but also because the movie is not officially out yet, I think, but critics have already been watching it and reviewing it, and the main criticism that I'm seeing on this movie is that it's simply too short, you know, to capture. It simplifies the story of Stephen King's The Dark Tower, which is obviously a series of books, too much in order to make a cohesive movie-length, feature-length story. So I think that fans of the book series, because it's been so many decades of trying to get this on the screen at all, so now that it sort of has momentum, I think book fans who are disappointed with the movie because it doesn't capture the depth of the story will be very, very excited to hear that it's being adapted for a television series, because obviously that is where dense source material books thrive, Harry Potter. And we've recently seen the success of American Gods that I think have given people a lot of faith in TV adaptations of books. So I think this is a good thing, and I'm excited to see Glenn Mazzara moving on. I mean, sadness, because Damien is pretty much dead in the water, but I guess we have to make our peace with that.
Mm-hmm. I didn't take the story because I'm not familiar with Dark Tower. I haven't seen the movie yet. I'm not very familiar with Stephen King entities, but I know that it's got a very passionate fan base. So if this can find a home on television, I'm positive that it'll do well amongst viewers. And like you said, Mazzara is no stranger to kind of like the darker fantasy genre. So this is a good fit for him. And yay also for like diversity, because he's very well known for diversifying his writer's room. So that's like mm-hmm. yay for visibility. That's always really nice. And this next story, oh my gosh, it's Divergent, you guys. It's like the franchise that'll never die. I honestly can't believe they haven't just let this quietly go. But for those of you that are interested in finding out how this saga for the screen ends, there's a little good news in this. As you know, the final fourth installment of the Divergent series was set to hit theaters last April, and it all just kind of came tumbling down. But fear not for those of you that have been waiting patiently, because Lionsgate announced last week that Starz, who is also a sister company of Lionsgate, is officially working on a fourth Divergent film, which will be still titled Ascendant. But interestingly, they're actually developing it as a drama TV series based on Ascendant. So it sounds like we're going to get not necessarily a final movie, but a final chapter of Divergent in TV series form. Of course, if you've been following the news surrounding Divergent, you will know that the plan originally when they announced that they were not going to bring the last part of the film series to the silver screen was to make it as a made-for-TV movie and then have that be a backdoor pilot of sorts for a spin-off television series. So the fact that Starz is already marketing this as a drama TV series lends to the theory that perhaps they're still going along with this plan. Remains to be seen whether or not that is accurate, but, you know, that's all we can kind of infer from what we've learned. There's no word yet on whether any of the original cast will be back for this, but all signs point to no based on what actors like Shailene Woodley and Miles Teller and Ansel Elgort have said in the past about their involvement with the series as a whole. So I would expect that they'll be recasting everything, and maybe it's worth it just to completely scrap this and start fresh. But we'll see what Starz/Lionsgate will do with this, and it'll be interesting to see what transpires now that it's potentially found a home.
I mean, why the hell not, right? I have to admit, like, I don't have a particularly strong attachment to this movie or book series. I thought the books were fine. I actually think the books are pretty okay. I read them sort of on the wave of Twilight and Percy Jackson and Hunger Games. So on top of those, Divergent kind of fell a little bit flat for me. I think I had YA fatigue at that point, and also the story of Twilight and Hunger Games and Divergent kind of started blending together in my head. And then the movie adaptation came out, and I just did not like the movie adaptation. There were very, very few interesting parts, and I feel like it just got worse and worse. And I stopped after like the second or third one. I think I stopped halfway through one of those movies. I was like, I'm done. I can't spend my time on this. So I think as far as launching a TV adaptation of the final book is weird for several reasons, but I guess they're going to make one major change from the final book regarding Triss. Yeah. I almost can't imagine they wouldn't, but who knows, right?
Because the thing is, too, it's like, it's not even the final book. It's just half of the final book.
But I thought they already released one half of the final book, or no?
So then the TV show is just going to be based on half the book?
What strikes me as so bizarre is that as far as I remember, the Maze Runner was another one that was contributing to my fatigue, but as far as I remember, correct me if I'm wrong, I feel like it's okay to talk a little bit about it now because it's been so long since it's out, but doesn't the final book basically dispel with the parameters of the world that we've come to know and launch the characters into, like, basically the real world as it was? So
yeah, I think so, because they find out at the end of book two that the world that they know is not, it's not the real world. That they're like a controlled experiment.
Exactly. So in terms of launching a TV series off of that, I'm really curious how that even works, because I feel like the interesting thing about Divergent is the fact that there is this system of, like, you're sorted into these four house things, and she is Divergent, and that's the whole point. And if they take that away, and if they take the city away, Chicago or wherever they are, like, what's the point? I'm really curious, but I'm not like dismissing it or anything. I'm just genuinely really curious why they can launch a franchise series, like, similarly, I guess, to what they're doing for Cassandra Clare's Mortal Instruments, which is also very different from the movie, but this is like, or the book, but this is legitimately like, the movie ends with them, the story ends with them leaving all of this. So there's nothing divergent about it anymore. I guess they are diverging from the story, but like, there's nothing. It's so interesting to me. And then also they're going to have a brand new cast, which is also super interesting to me. And I don't really care about that because I wasn't particularly attached to the cast of the movie. So I didn't think it was that good. So I don't really care about that part, but it's so interesting. It's like saying, okay, we're going to launch like a TV series about the Wizard of Oz, but we're going to start it at the point when she returns to Kansas, you know?
Yeah, so weird. I mean, like, the thing about Kansas is that it's mundane.
Yeah, right, and exactly.
And the whole, I mean, like, I guess you could argue that she learns to appreciate that that is home, but the other point is that adventure is out there.
Exactly, and I think that's my sort of my big question about Divergent is like, so what? Like, what the hell? Like, what's the point? But I guess them having all the options in the world for where to take the story, it's like a 50-50 chance that it's going to be brilliant. So why not, right? Interesting. Hmm. Andrew's having a blast reporting on this.
I know. He's living for it.
He's reasonable for Hypeable. Yeah. That and Shading Cursed Child are like his reasons for writing right now, I think. You all know my main reason for writing, which is the 100. I have 100 reasons, problems, but the 100 ain't one. I don't know where I'm going with this. So always trying to find a way to bring up the 100 news. And this week we had some more information about the fifth season, specifically that it will be 13 episodes long, like season 4, unlike seasons 2 and 3, which were both 16 episodes long. So I am not surprised and vaguely disappointed, because I think that the more the 100, the better. And I think particularly with season 5 being sort of a mix of flashbacks and present day, I think a longer season order would have given them the opportunity to stretch out. Even they didn't even have to make up more story. They could have just used it as an opportunity to stretch out the story they have. Because I think if you look at season 4, all of the plot lines that they tried to squeeze in there, I think if it had been 3 episodes longer, the pacing would have felt a lot better. However, I also think in season 4 that there were plot lines that they could have taken right out, like the Rowan war thing in the middle of the season that was completely unnecessary. So I do think that it's not necessarily like, I'm not going, oh, because it's 13 episodes as opposed to 16, it's going to be a worse season. But I do think that when you are only working with 13, you can't be doing what you would have been able to do in 16. And when looking at season 4, I can't help but feel like they were still operating under their season 2 and 3 model of having 16 episodes, but tried to squeeze it all into 13. And I don't think that worked particularly. Well, it worked. I loved it. But I still think that a 16 episode season 4 would have been ideal. And hopefully, since this is the second season in a row with 13 episodes, the pacing kinks will have been worked out. Does that make sense? What do you think?
Yeah, totally. I mean, we've talked before about how incredible it is that they can pack so much into one season, because they do get shorter seasons than a lot of the other CW shows. Like, look at The Vampire Diaries, consistently about 22 episodes per season. And The 100 is able to, well, they kind of have to trim away a lot of the fat in order to make sure that they're able to tell the full story. But at the same time, it's kind of hard to make inferences of whether or not the extra time is needed based on what we're going to see this coming year, just because of where we're at with all of these characters. Even so, it's like you think to yourself, well, like, you must need more time because, like, we have to refamiliarize ourselves with everybody because we know nothing about who they are now. So it's kind of like a double-edged sword for me.
Exactly. It is for me, too. And I'm like, I keep thinking, like, one of the things I love so much about The 100 is, obviously, the main thing I love about The 100 is its characters. So I'm like looking at this 13-episode season and I can't help but think, okay, but if there had been 16, we could have had like a whole episode about Kane and Abby in the bunker, or like Jackson, or like whatever the hell, you know, or like a more fleshed out backstory for the newcomers, or for like more flashbacks to space. But then again, I am here for the story that they are telling and not the story that I imagine in my head that they might be telling. So, like, I'm sure that the story they have planned fits into 13 episodes. And I'm sure that, again, considering how much I did genuinely love season 4 and how relatively few things, like pacing-wise, I felt like staggered, I think that season 5 has the potential to be absolutely fantastic. And I don't think whether it's 13 or 16 episodes, like whether that matters that much. But aside from I'm a big fan and I want as much time with these people as possible. There's also an interesting thing that's kind of emerging, which is that some fans are hoping, like, we don't know how much time we have with the 100. Like, we don't know how many seasons are left. Jason Rothenberg recently gave an interview when he said that there's going to be a sharp left turn towards the end of the season that opens up 5 years more. And I'm just like, what now? Haven't we turned enough? We like basically back where we started, which is kind of the point, I guess. But so first of all, there's that. But there's also fans are sort of beginning to vaguely hope if it's possible for the season to the series to actually end on a round even 100 episode number, which would obviously be ideal because it's the 100. And I think someone did the math. I don't have it right now, but someone did the math. Like if we have 7 seasons and one of them is 13 episodes and one of them is 16 episodes or something like that, it would come to an even 100. So,
I mean, 7 seasons, I know that we are always going to want more, but 7 seasons is a pretty good run.
I think so too. And I think that, because I know I've seen some people sort of push back against Jason saying that he's opening up the story or like twisting it again to open up for new material because they're like, oh no, I don't want it to run for too long. But I think as it stands right now, I think some series should be short and some series should be long and some series sort of grow and change organically and actually get better the more they go on. And I feel like the 100, like we won't know if it's a Once Upon a Time or a, I can't think of an example, Buffy. You know, Buffy kept being good, even though it changed a lot. And even though some people prefer the older seasons, a lot of people preferred the later seasons as well, because it did go through some changes and it did mature in a way. And I think that it's, you know, you don't know until you know if the 100 is going to stagger in later seasons or if it's going to keep improving. And I think, you know, we're in season 4 now and we just finished season 4, and I think the show has learned so much and matured so much. And of course there are things about the earlier seasons that I like, but overall, I think now it's a better show. So when he says that he has a lot of story left to tell, I'm just excited because I can see him, I can see them telling that very well. And I'm not worried about the show losing momentum because I think that's the one problem the 100 will never have. Who knows?
That's a very good point.
That brings us to the end of the news, and we're going to talk about TV show of the week now. And, you know, you guessed it. We're obviously going to talk about Game of Thrones. But before we do that, I want to just briefly talk about Wynonna Earp. It's been a while since I talked about it on the show, and I am now almost caught up. I have one episode left to go. I was watching it last night, and, like, oh my gosh. I always prefer with Wynonna Earp when I have a couple of episodes to watch in a row. Because when I just have to watch one episode, I don't really have time to get into it, if you know what I mean. So like now I think I watched 3 or 4 episodes in a row and I'm just like, Wynonna Earp is my favorite show. Season 2 is really fantastic. It goes in a direction that they didn't plan because the actress Melanie Scrofano was pregnant, and they basically, I talked a little bit about this a couple of weeks ago, that they had to change their original plan for the season. They had to write in her pregnancy, and you know, when you have a show like this and you have this basically kick-ass, take no crap, drinking, messed up female lead and she has to be pregnant, you're like, oh my god, how's that gonna work? But actually I think so far it's turning out to be a stroke of genius, because I think it's sort of like, this is not what you would expect from a show like this, you know, to do to its lead character, to give this lead character suddenly a pregnancy. But it sort of goes, they've chosen to make it a really empowering thing and saying, well, she's still a badass and she's still the quote unquote chosen one and she's still all of those things. She's just a superhero in another way now because she's a single mother. And it's like, oh, wow, that's so cool. I love that. And it's really exciting, and I'm very, very invested in the quote-unquote love triangle. I am a Wynonna doll shipper for life, and I find it, like, it hasn't been a that good of a season for me, but it's kind of maybe starting to pick up a little bit. So I'm enjoying that. And obviously Way Hot is like the ship of dreams. And they are apparently having some problems next episode, I've heard. So I'm worried about that. The story of Wynonna Earp, it's so funny because this is like one of the only shows. I'm not 100% sure what's going on in the show at any time. I think the way they tell the story and the way they integrate Monster of the Week and overall mythology is really confusing to me. And I'm not like sure why, because I don't usually have this problem with TV shows. But with Wynonna Earp, I'm basically left like unsure about, like, until they straight up tell me in the show, they're like, this means this. I'm like, oh, that's what it means. So story-wise, I'm totally lost, but loving it. And I just think the show is such a gem. And yeah, I'm glad I'm catching up with it. Season 2 is proving to be a wild ride that none of us could have expected. So let's talk about Game of Thrones. Speaking of wild rides...
Oh my gosh.
Oh my god. This show.
I know.
You can start talking, because
I keep forgetting that this is a really short season, and it's so weird that we're at this particular point, because this fourth episode was so dramatic, and you get this big battle, and usually that's like towards the end, and then you forget that like we're basically at the end of the season already because they've cut it short. It's like, it's so crazy.
I know.
My favorite part of this whole, we're just like spoiling everybody, but you know.
Yeah, if you haven't watched episode 4 yet, now's a good time to skip ahead.
My favorite part, because I feel like we've all been waiting for it, is that little like the sword practice with Arya and Brienne.
Oh my
god. It was just like, oh, it was like everything we've wanted for so long. And I want them to be best friends. I feel like they already are.
Yes, because they are like they're two cut from the same cloth, yes. These two characters. And it's such a, and this is like one of the things that I think is about Game of Thrones that I'm just loving this season. And I kind of wish we'd had it earlier, because I do think they sort of, again, it's one of those things, they squeeze them in all at once. But it's like, finally, characters I'm meeting back up again, you know, finally they're getting to interact with people they've never interacted with in the whole show. And this is when, you know, if I was Jason Rothenberg and watching Game of Thrones, I would be like, they have 5 years more of material from this, you know, because it's like, it's opened up so many other possibilities. So now I'm just like, why couldn't Arya and Brienne have met like 3 seasons ago? Or why aren't there like 3 seasons left of them going on some kind of adventure? Or, you know, we have in the other parts of the world, obviously we'll talk about that too, we have Jon Snow and Daenerys, which is, oh, a whole other ball game. Or we have like Bronn and Jaime, or we have like all of the Stark reunions at Winterfell, and we're getting to see those characters interact with each other. And part of me is just thrilled that this is all finally happening, and part of me is like, okay, but during like those 6 years where, you know, stuff happened, but not this stuff. I feel like we're finally getting to the heart of it, and I wish we had more time there. So that's like my yes. I'm torn, because I love it so much, and I'm like, but I could have also loved this 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I totally
just feel one of this. Those things, you know, it's like they're giving us everything we want all at once.
I know, it's so hard, and like you said, you want to spend more time there and you can't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they're just heading over, and you can see how fast they're moving. I love the fast pace, by the way. I think it's great, but it mm-hmm. also means that, like, you know, Daenerys just flew to King's Landing in the last episode, and she's probably going to advance that plot in a major way next week. And then, like, we don't... It's been so long that we've waited. I think that's the balance of setup and payoff, because we're so invested and we've stayed with the show and through some really harsh times too, and boring times. And then here we are, and we're getting basically the reward for watching. But it almost feels like it's kind of like when you've baked a cake for like the whole day, and you've like labored away, and you've, you know, made the dough and made the dressing, that's not the word, but you know what I mean, and you've like made it look very nice, and then it's like you put it on the table and you're just like, and then you just like eat it all and then it's gone. And you're like, but I spent so long on this cake. And maybe that's just how it is. But I'm still like, yeah, but I want to see Daenerys. Like, I want to see 10 minutes of Daenerys riding Drogon around, like Harry Potter style, King of the World. And like, I don't know. It's a weird combination of exhilaration and this nagging, like, sadness that, you know, we don't get, we probably won't get that Arya Brienne bonding. But then again, you might argue that we don't need it, you know, because like we have like one scene is enough. I don't know. It's tough.
It is tough. I can't wait for this. Let's talk about Sunday though.
I know. Let's talk about John and Danny.
Oh yeah.
AKA
oh,
the ship God. That was promised.
I know. Oh, they're delivering for sure.
Oh my God. Like, I have to admit, like, when it comes to Game of Thrones, I really, really couldn't care less, like, beyond Jaime and Brienne, obviously, and a slight little hope that I harbor for Arya and Gendry.
I know,
who, by
right?
the way, might be coming back soon. Who knows?
Oh my God. Excited. Wait, a side note. So, I don't know if I talked about this on the show, but I definitely told Selena that my brother is watching Game of Thrones for the first time. Mm-hmm. And he just got to the part in season 3 where Gendry is saying that he's going to go with the Brotherhood, you know?
And then she's like, you would be my family.
Yeah, then he's like, no, you would be my lady. And I'm like, oh, my ship is sailing and my heart is breaking. And my brother's like, you need to calm down. Like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, you don't understand.
I know, and then you don't see him for 4 years.
I know, he's like rowing away. But they said.
I know.
Ugh.
They promised.
I know. I need it.
The Gendry that was promised.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I hope we'll see him soon, but we might see him soon. But no, Jamie, no, John and Danny. So basically, like, obviously in the books, like, they're all like, oh, well, they are like Asura High. They are ice and fire. They are going to combine. And everyone's like, oh, it would be so cliche if they, like, if it had been leading up to them finding each other, like, and then falling in love, which I mean, I disagree. I don't necessarily think so, but I can see why people would find it, like, predictable. But in the show, I'm like, I didn't expect that they would go for that, because again, I figured it was one of the times they wouldn't have time for, and I wasn't really expecting anything beyond them sort of meeting and sassing each other and then, like, basically going off and making a plot happen. But I feel like they're really going for it, and I'm like, surprisingly into it.
Yeah, that scene, like, the
minute
cave.
They were on screen together, yes, they have so much chemistry.
I know,
like, holy crap. And I think, and that's why, like, again, people can say it's predictable all they want, but I also think when it makes sense, like when the actors have chemistry and when the story kind of feels like it's leading up to it, it's like really dumb not to do it, right? So I'm just like, oh my God. John and Danny forever. I love it. I ship it. I'm here for it. So I'm really excited. And I feel like, again, their scenes have just been so intense and laden with so much meaning, you know? And the fact that he's like a secret Targaryen too is something, it's a truth bomb that's just waiting to drop. And I'm like so thrilled for that. Even though I worry that Danny will like try to kill him. She'll kill him or marry him, you know, to secure her claim. Or maybe not, because maybe the Iron Throne is going to be burned to the ground by Cersei, as is my prediction, and they're just going to go fight White Walkers.
Yeah. I'll go with that.
I don't know.
I think that it's like, know. it's going to be like, if she gets to sit on the Iron Throne, it'll definitely be a figurative Iron Throne, not a literal Iron Throne.
Mm-hmm.
But I know she wants it.
I think she might like have, I don't know, I still think it would be interesting if the Iron Throne was just gone, because it's what they've been fighting for.
It was melted down, and then they'd be like, yeah. And you get a sword, and you get a sword.
Yes, exactly, because they need those swords for the White Walkers.
That's right.
So yeah, I don't know, but I think that that's not what the story is about. I don't know, I could be wrong, but it's going to be interesting. And shout out to Davos, who is like one of my absolute favorite characters, and who is like shipping Daenerys as much as we are.
Yeah, and his loyalty
too. And
who
loves Missandei.
Also, yeah. Also, season 3 is. See, I'm just going down the Game of Thrones memory lane whenever I pop in on my brother's first time watch, because we get to meet Shireen and
that remind me, my God. But
I know.
But no, Davos is so sweet. And like, he's like the dad of Westeros. You know how kind of like in The Hundred, Kane is like trying to run around adopting all the kids? Like, that's Davos. He sees Missandei. He's like, my child.
Totally.
I think that's amazing. I just love that. And Jaime, I mean, he's obviously not dead. Like, that's not how Jaime goes out.
Also, that scene with Tyrion, too, where he's just like, run away, yes. You idiot. It's just like, ugh. Yes.
And the brothers meeting each other for the first time. And now Jaime knows that Tyrion didn't kill Joffrey, right? So that's really going to put a wrench to it. They're all the Lannisters are finally back in the same place. And that dragon demolishing scene. I actually have a question for you, because that I know everyone loves that dragon scene. And I did too. But it came right on the heels of Jon telling Dany that if she used her dragon, she would be, like, quote-unquote, just like everyone else. So what do you think it means for Daenerys and her place in the show that she basically went against this advice? And because I think she was right to do it. You know, I think that there was nothing else for her to do but to play the one card she had, which was dragons. And she didn't burn innocents. She burned an army.
Yeah. I mean, like, I guess you could argue that there would have been casualties even if her army had marched in and killed everybody. Yeah,
right.
But at the same time, it was a drastic effort. And I think that the warning is just more like, I don't know. Like, I don't think, like, I have a problem necessarily with how she did it. Because at the end of the day, that's not only her strategy, but that's her trump card. But I do think that she'll have more of a problem if she lets the power go to her head and won't budge for the good of her people. And you know, because like like just rulers too. If she doesn't let go of this whole, like, you must bend the knee or I will not ally with you with Jon, like, then you're going to have a problem because, like, you can't get everything that you want. But like.
Okay, but so on that though. I think she's 100% right to ask him to bend the knee because I think she said it so well in the cave, like when she echoed something John had actually said to Mance Rayder a couple of seasons ago when she went, something like, is your pride more important than your people? And I found that to be interesting because there's no reason for John to not bend the knee. Mm-hmm. Like, actually, there's no actual reason except he's stubborn.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't.
But I would also say that she
especially because he's going to fight the White Walkers.
I would also say that she should, like, maybe not in that instance, but maybe she should heed her own advice in the future, you know?
What does that mean?
Just like that whole, like, will you let your pride get in the way of your people? Like, that, I think that that's something that, like, anybody that has sat on the Iron Throne has never been able to do. And I hope that Dany can overcome that. But we've seen time and time again on the series that the power drives men and women to madness. Mm-hmm. Like, look at Cersei. Cersei was always, like, a little bit crazy, but she was really smart. And now she's just a psychopath.
Well, yeah, that's true. But and that is absolutely definitely true. I just think in the case of Dany, like, asking Jon to bend the knee, because I've seen so much criticism going like, oh, Jon is the best and Dany is the worst and Jon is so reasonable and Dany's so unreasonable. And the only thing I could think of watching that scene was like Jon literally just bend the knee. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't take anything away from you if the battle is the White Walkers. And I don't think that what Dany is asking for is unreasonable. Like, I don't think that when she's coming to Westeros and she's looking for allies and she's going, I'm going to be the queen. And he's going to, like, actually, it doesn't matter who's queen because there are White Walkers coming. And she's like, well, if it doesn't matter, why don't you just bend the knee and we can fight the White Walkers? And he's like, then I think that kind of, like, why would she trust what he says if he doesn't? I don't know. I think it's an interesting balance. But I think if he's so concerned with this White Walker threat, then I don't think that it matters who is technically king and who is technically the lord of, like, a kingdom. You know what I mean? So I'm just, I found myself so squarely on Dany's side that it's hard for me to see a good argument for why he couldn't just, like, I can't see any reason beyond, like, stubbornness or pride for him not to bend the knee. And I feel like his whole point with Daenerys was that you don't have time for pride. when there are White Walkers coming. So why doesn't he take his own advice, you know?
Mm.
So that's a sort of an interesting little power struggle there. And I do wonder how that's going to be affected exactly, because I don't know if it was meant to be that way, but I think it did come across that way for me, that he basically gave her advice and she did the exact opposite of what he said that he thought she should do. And so that leads an interesting wrench to it. And it's going to be interesting to see Tyrion confronted with his family, because he was clearly not happy with the Lannister army being destroyed right in front of his eyes.
He wasn't. And that was interesting, too, just because she had basically accused him of undermining her to protect his family before she set out to do that. Mm-hmm. On the beach and stuff. So, I mean, if he is upset, I don't think he's going to show it, because Tyrion is, he's in a very delicate situation too. So,
mm-hmm.
I guess we'll see what happens next week, but.
Yes, we will. It's so exciting. Anyway, Game of Thrones is amazing, and we will keep talking about it on Hype for while it's still in season, which isn't that long, unfortunately, but we love it. And we would love to know what you listeners think of the season as well. You can I'm gonna say that for you, so you know it, but I'll say it at the end. But we should get through some listener feedback first, where you guys tell us about your pop culture experiences and you react to what we talked about last week on the show. So let us start with Twitter. If we just go back and forth, if you start with Katie.
Sure. Katie says, I had to skip a big chunk of this week's episode because I'm still working on season 4 of The 100. I'm getting there. Haha. Well, Katie, if you're not caught up on Game of Thrones, I'm so sorry, because you'll have to skip through some stuff again.
Yes. Laura Morrow says, Merlin is still on Netflix, ready to start watching. It has been a while. I'm so excited to rewatch. Merlin is the reason I got Netflix back in the day. Also, Teen Wolf is back. I'm not sure I am emotionally ready for the show to end. And boy, did it up the creepy factor this season. Game of Thrones this week blew my mind, literally. I was so thrilled with one scene in particular. I have been waiting for so long. See, now I'm wondering what it is. Because that could be Arya and Brienne, or
Arya
the
Sansa.
Stark Girl reunion. We didn't even talk about that. That was beautiful.
Yeah, that was.
It could be anything. You have to tell us what it was, Laura.
Katie says, so I love how so many of these are like excitement over our impending Merlin rewatch.
Yeah, I know.
Katie says, so excited to watch Merlin for the first time with you guys. Been wanting to do so for a while. Now I have an excuse. Well, Katie, we're so happy that you're going to join us on this magical journey.
I know. And so is Kelly, who says, me too. I tried a couple of times and never got into it, but I know so many people who love this show. So hopefully we can guide you guys through, because Merlin is a fun show to do, and it is kind of silly, and we'll get into it, but we hope you stick it out.
We're gonna have like some ground rules for
I know.
Jamie Fraser says, okay, this Merlin news has delighted me in the middle of a frustrating week, so I guess thanks for having my back, smiley face.
Aw. And Laura Haynes says, Discovery of Witches by Deb Harkness is amazing. That's a book rec for us. And oh yeah, it's witches rec, because we asked for witches. Sorry, I just wanted to contextualize.
That's right.
Cool.
Callie J. Cox says, when you've just started Merlin season 1 for the first time and Hype announces a rewatch, happy dance. Well, I'm glad that you're going to listen to us ramble anyway. You'll probably beat us to the end, but that's okay.
And Raven, she said that she loves, loves, loves Lindsay Sterling, and she's so hyped to listen to the bonus podcast episode that we released. And that's up on our feed on Hypeable as well, and on iTunes if you are a Lindsay Sterling fan. Pam interviewed her at Comic-Con, and the podcast is up now.
Mm-hmm. Katie says, I just finished season 4 of The 100. I have so many thoughts and feelings.
Continuation from earlier in the in the feedback. So she's done, so she can go back and listen to the last week's episode now. And Kelpie says, what we should talk about, The 100 and Wonder Woman, can never have enough of that. Oh, and the bold type is refreshingly feminist, realistic, and positive. The bold type. I've only watched the pilot. Have you? You've seen more, right?
Yeah, I'm on. Actually, I was watching episode 6 before we hit record, and it just, I love the show so much. I think it's so great, and some of the issues that they bring up are really interesting. both from the editorial aspect and also from, like, you know, like a life aspect too. I think they're doing a really great job with it, and I'm enjoying it for sure.
And we have an email to wrap up the show. Pamela?
Okay, let me just take a sip of water. That time. All right, here's the email for the week. Hi, ladies. I'm in despair. I finally watched the last season of Merlin after putting it off and staying in denial for years, and I just don't know what to do with myself. I love the show so much, and I don't think they ended the show on a great note. Oh, this does not bode well for everybody who's going to watch for the first time with us. I'm mad about quite a few things, actually, like certain people or how they... I'm going to try not to spoil anybody.
Thanks, fam. Yeah, I was thinking that.
Or who got to spend time with whoever. Blah, blah, blah. Spoiler, spoiler, spoilers. generally unsatisfied with the ending of the show and the fifth season as a whole.
No.
We will discuss this in our rewatch. Don't you worry.
Yeah.
Anyway, our lovely emailer continues, I'm already trying to find Merlin fanfiction to cheer me up, so I was wondering if you had come across any that either made the ending a little bit better or were a continuation of the story set in modern day.
Oh my god. I should have prepared for this.
Also, I just want to know that I'm not alone with being upset about the ending. I just have so many emotions about the whole thing. Last thing about Merlin, any good Camelot, King Arthur, and Merlin books out there? My boyfriend and I are really in the mood for more content like this, so we would love book recommendations regarding anything King Arthur. To take myself out of despair, I just started Riverdale. TBH, I'm mainly watching for Cole Sprouse, and wanted to get other suggestions from you that maybe will make me feel less sad about finally finishing Merlin. Thanks for helping me out of my pit of sadness. Any recommendations would be appreciated. Thanks, LeClaire.
Oh my god, on the fanfic, like, let's start with books, because I'm, like, frantically Googling, because I have to confess.
There's the one we always wreck, which is the student prince.
Of course.
That's like,
that kind of counts as because it is, like, modern day. It is an AU, but it's implied that they are reincarnated, so that kind of works.
And that's not a spoiler, because that's, like, the key aspect of Arthurian legend that, you know,
that they get reincarnated, because the whole story of King Arthur is like he's there when Britain needs him the most. So it's kind of all these modern day fics are kind of based on him and Merlin and all the other characters sort of coming back for another round. And I think the Student Prince is not only one of the best Merlin fanfics, but one of the best fanfics in general. And I have to confess, like, I've only ever really read fanfic in Harry Potter and in the Merlin fandoms. That's pretty much the only ones where I've kind of really dug in, because I feel like those stories lend themselves so well to fanfic, and the authors in these fandoms are so incredible. And the Student Prince, if you haven't read that yet, that is
it's really,
one,
really good. It's like the cult. I'm pretty sure, like, that's the one everybody will wreck, but I feel like there's another one. Hold on. The thing about Merlin fanfic is that I haven't read too much of it, but then, like, being so ingrained in the fandom as we have been, you kind of get
We should also probably preface this, and most of these will be Merthyr.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that's, like, the only pairing. what was I going to say? Oh, yeah. So, like, there's like, so many that just, like, you see them, like, talked about it again and again and again.
I have one.
Okay.
And this is one, and I have to confess, because, again, it's been so long since I've read these, but one called Accidental Memory in the Case of Death. I know that I've read this. I just saw this wrecked on a, like, post-finale like, reincarnation list. And then it's, like, basically about Arthur and Merlin. They don't know who they were. They get flashes of memories. Like, I feel like this is one that I read and that I remember the title as being one that I really like. But most of these, to be honest with you, this is a very angsty fandom. So most of these are, like, really dark. I might have to, like, actually sit down and take a proper look at these old wrecks and stuff and see if I can't find any for you that might be a little bit more upbeat.
I have heard that I have never read them, but the Radio Man, like, I think Radio Man's the first one by Footloose. That is, like, a really popular one, and she has, like, six books.
Yeah, they're so long. And I started reading them, but they're, like,
that's, like, military AU. So that's kind of interesting, and Merlin is, like, a tech operator, and Arthur is, like, the captain of this, like, I don't know if they're platoons, but it's, like, set in modern day, but they're like, everybody is like in the military. So yeah, but like, but if you don't want anything super angsty, like the Student Prince is actually really fun. It's like a rom-com. Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Everybody's there and you'll just like in some form, and it's just, actually I might just reread it for the lulz because yeah. It's great.
I know, I'm like with a big smile.
Me too.
I
was
like, we don't need to watch the series.
And I don't even want to talk about it because I don't want to spoil it for anybody that maybe wants to read it.
We could just do chapter by chapter the student prince.
That's going to be the real sixth season.
Yes. Yes. Oh, my gosh. But she also asked about books.
Yeah.
And I know that you are more versed in Arthurian books than I am, but...
I have a hardcore Arthurian legend book, but, well, first of all, The Mist of Avalon, that's like, it centers around the woman of Arthurian legend, that's like classic. And also something more modern that is like really fun, quick read is Avalon High by Meg Cabot, who also wrote The Princess Diaries. That's a really fun, like, reincarnation-esque Arthurian legend story set in high school, and I really mm-hmm. I love her books. They're just like really quick reads, so mm-hmm. yeah.
I haven't read this one, but my brother actually read it and really enjoyed it, which was The Seeing Stone. Have you read that one?
That sounds really familiar, but I don't think I have.
It's basically like, I think it's a trilogy of Arthurian legends books about, like, he has a vision in a cave, you know, similar to with the story we know, and he has to sort of act out from that. And that one was, my brother really liked that. And then I think just Mary Stewart's. I know she's, her books are like extremely long, but I've only read one of them, but I really enjoy those. That's the Merlin trilogy, and it's obviously very, very different from the show. Like, you won't find, because the show is so different from the legend, so you won't really find anything too similar. But that one, I found myself really enjoying that one.
Mm-hmm. I really like also, like, if you haven't read any of the T.A. Baron stuff, like The Sword and the Stone, or King Arthur and His Knights of the Round Table and stuff like that. Those are like really fun reads too. Very similar to the story that you will find in like Disney's The Sword and the Stone. So in that telling, Arthur is an orphan squire and then becomes king after he pulls mm-hmm. the sword from the stone. So there's like lots of variations. The show, if I remember correctly, BBC's Merlin doesn't really follow much lore, but I guess it's closest to Sir Thomas Malory's Le Morte d'Arthur, which is kind of like the root of most Arthurian legend, like modern day retellings of Arthurian legend. So if you really want to get super nerdy with it, you might want to check that out.
Cool. Well, we hope that kind of ish helped, mm-hmm. LeClaire.
Also, other shows for just, like, random shows. Like, you could try Gilmore Girls. That makes us all happy.
It has nothing to do with Merlin.
No, but she said I wanted to get other suggestions. She said she just started watching Riverdale.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Parks and Recreation.
Mm-hmm. Watch something happy or something that'll make you laugh.
Yeah, Parks always works for me. But I will get back to you on those fanfic recs, because I feel like all that time I spent reading them should come in handy sometimes somehow.
There's just so much. I'm sure that like it's been so long, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we'll get back to you on that. And if anyone else wants to chime in, now's the time. I guess we'll be discussing that more on our specials of Merlin that we will be getting into very shortly. You can stay tuned for Hype on our Twitter at Hypeable Hype to get more updates on that. Also, make sure you, if you want to, make sure you subscribe to us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/hypepodcast. You can send us an email, which is hypepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Instagram at Hypeable Hype, and you can find us on Hypeable, which is hypable.com. So we look forward to hearing from you, and thank you for listening, and have a great week, everyone. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye.